Welcome, listeners, to time for an awakening on Black Talk Radio Network, new media for the new millennia. This is a history and current events program from a cultural perspective. We find this program necessary because Hosea 4:6 states, "My people are destroyed for the lack of knowledge." But we as a people can turn this around. Proverbs 4:7 states, "Wisdom is the principal thing. Therefore, get wisdom with all thy getting, get an understanding." Nick Ugin, welcome to the program this evening with your hosts, Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. The number to reach us to join the conversation this evening is 215-490-9832. That's 215-490-9832. We're streaming live at several locations. You can go to timeforanawakening.com, which is the homepage, and catch the live stream from that location. You can go to www.blacktalkradionetwork.com/timeforanawakening. Again, that's www.blacktalkradionetwork.com/timeforanawakening. Catch the live stream there also. You can go to ourradionetwork.com. Again, that's ourradionetwork.com/timeforanawakening. They broadcast out of the Black Belt. You catch the live stream there. Or you can download TuneIn to any of your handheld devices. TuneIn is a free app. And in that TuneIn search engine, just type in Time for an Awakening. There you'll see the icon and you can stream the program live, even into your car if you had the Bluetooth capabilities or the auxiliary connections. Again, that's Time for an Awakening radio program with a live stream on the TuneIn app. Drop us an email at timeforanawakening@gmail.com. Again, that's timeforanawakening@gmail.com. Time for an Awakening also has a fan page on Facebook. In that Facebook search engine, just type in Time for an Awakening radio program. There you always see interesting content being posted daily by myself or Brother Richard. And do me a favor, before you leave that page, just hit that like button. That's Time for an Awakening radio program with the fan page on Facebook. And Time for an Awakening Media is there. Always full of the latest podcasts of the various programs on Time for an Awakening. Interesting articles that you can read, download at later times, or share with your friends. Also, check out that Time for an Awakening Marketplace and our partnership with the B.B. Toomey. Always interesting content being posted in the marketplace. African language classes, classes on education, economics, social systems, health, and much, much more, taught by professors on both the continent and in the diaspora. So check it out. Make that one of your favorites. Put that in your address bar. That's timeforanawakening.com. Timeforanawakening.com will take you straight to Time for an Awakening Media. It's 8:07 here in the city of Philadelphia. Tonight, we're in Friday, Freestyle Friday mode. Anything that's on your mind, you can give us a call. We'll talk about it. It's a little chilly in the city of Philadelphia, but we're always ready to talk on Friday evenings. So you can be part of the conversation always by dialing 215-490-9832. Again, that's 215-490-9832. We'll be right back to get the program started after a brief word from our sponsors.
Distinguished guests, brothers and sisters, our friends and our enemies. Everybody is here.
You are listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
Not a Wu-Tang-a. All Insurance Incorporated, an African-American owned and operated insurance agency and business for over 20 years, located at 231 Southeastern Road in Glenside, PA, with other offices in Germantown and West Philadelphia. Call now for commercial insurance quotes, homeowners insurance quotes, automobile insurance quotes, notary and tax services, representing over 15 major A-rated insurance companies, offering a discount on all notary services when you call in for a free quote. Call this number, 215-885-2444. That number is 215-885-2444. 215-885-2444. All Insurance Incorporated.
Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley. Dooley Brothers, specializing in shingle, rubber roofs, gutters, downspouts, and vinyl sidings. Call for your free estimate today. 215-224-3882. That's 215-224-3882. Dooley Brothers Roofing, the roofing experts you can trust. That number again, 215-224-3882. 215-224-3882. Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley.
RG Electrical Inspections provides electrical inspections for realtors, licensed electricians, and homeowners. Licensed and insured underwriter, serving Philadelphia and surrounding area. Call today, 484-268-9837.
Overworked? Suffering with an underperforming company, headache customer, staff, or vendors? Or are you a startup who wants to get it right the first time and avoid the costly mistakes? We turned a $24,000 a year odd job handyman service into a seven-figure high-end custom home builder and commercial contractor licensed and operating in three states. This is just one transformation created for entrepreneurs like you in various industries around the country. Not what you're used to from accounting and business consulting? Well, welcome to New Business Solutions. If you're ready to go beyond advising, coaching, and training and get implemented results, call 301-244-9072. Let New Business Solutions apply the best comprehensive administrative, accounting, operations, human resources, management, sales, and marketing to help you actualize your vision for yourself and your company. From anywhere nationally, call 301-244-9072. Spelled new as in numerous on your device right now. Book your free consultation at newbusinesssolutions.com.
History is a clock that people use to tell their political and cultural time of day. It is also a compass that people use to find themselves on the map of human geography. History tells of people where they have been and what they have been, where they are and what they are. Most important, history tells a people where they still must go, what they still must be. The relationship of history to the people is the same as the relationship of a mother to her child.
From antiquity to the present, our people need to develop a new paradigm. It's time for an awakening. With your host, Brother Elliot, Sundays 7 p.m., Fridays at 8 p.m. for podcasting or live program scheduling. Hit us up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
Welcome back to Time for an Awakening. It's 8:13. Before we get started with our program this evening, I want to welcome in my co-host, Philadelphia activist and tour guide at the African American Museum here in Philadelphia at 7th and Arch Street. Brother Richard is with us. Brother Richard.
Yes, sir, Brother Ellie.
How are you, sir?
I'm a warm-blooded man, you know, wrestling with the new chill. Yeah. And it's supposed to be chillier.
Yeah, I think tomorrow they said it's going to be in the 20s in the morning.
Yes, and looking for some snow.
Yeah, so you better wait before you go outside. Wait till the sun come up a little bit. Maybe it'll get up in the 40s. I think it's supposed to be in the 40s tomorrow anyway for a high.
It's a chill all over. And you know, it's something that you just got to work towards. You know, I don't know if the listener would believe this, but throughout the summer, I've been trying to make sure I got all the stuff in play to deal with the winter, you know, so I, you know, the whole thing about preparation for the chill is maybe a metaphor for what's coming down the pipe and in a couple of different areas, you know, because you know, the election was it this week? Didn't they have elections this week?
Yeah, Tuesday.
Yeah, you know, and in Philadelphia, I don't know about in other parts of the country, but Philadelphia is supposed to had. I don't know if you call it exciting. I was looking for numbers. I don't know if you've seen any numbers as far as what the you know, with a population of like 44% of the population, 45% of the population of Philadelphia is what they call African American.
Mm-hmm.
What is the you know, actual amount to actually participate it?
No, but you know, I haven't seen it, but I know that the majority of our people not voting.
Yeah. Yeah. But it seems that even with that, it you know, as far as the those who did, and it felt a little disruption as far as at the local level by you know, selecting a candidate under a third party platform.
Yeah, the young lady's name escapes me, but yeah, she made the news. I guess it made national news because I seen it posted on a few people's page. In fact, I seen it posted on Carl Nelson's page that this young lady won from this Workers' Party.
Kendra Brooks.
Yeah,
I believe that.
Yeah, from this Workers' Party to be in city council here in Philadelphia. Richard, that only just brings back to mind the sessions that we had late last summer, the early part of the winter, when we was entitled 50 Years of Black Representation, Now is the Time for African-Centered Party here in the city, and trying to get people to understand that it's time that we develop leadership to lead the communities, not blacks to be involved in the Democrat or Republican Party and latch onto their planks and platforms, which really have nothing to do with the neighborhoods, with the people, with what they're going through in these communities, that it was important that they develop some representation, independent representation, to represent the people of these communities. And now you see that this party then popped up and won a seat here in this city that's been a Democratic stronghold for over almost 60 years. In fact, they said it's the first time it ever happened. Did I lose you, Richard?
It moved the guaranteed Republican minority person, you know, seat used to be. I think the understanding is there is two seats for the Republican Party or the minority party. And since the Republican Party is the minority, they had a guaranteed two seats. It was open, but they were guaranteed since they were at large seats. And this party was able to take one of them seats, which weakened the guaranteed position for the Republican Party here. But I definitely agree. You know, Elliot, it really, and I looked, you know, you know, for those, when you look up that this working party, it's an interesting couple of interesting dynamics when we're dealing with just that. Black political formation, and I'm saying black political formation specifically, that was supposed to be formulated to deal with policies and platforms specifically, and using the electoral process specifically for black people. Our ability or inability or our disruption in creating that kind of political formation. But what I noticed in the Workers' Party, there's two black people that are at the head of the party, of the three-party head of this party that came into being somewhat like, they came in 98, so a little over 11 years they've been working at it. And there's a black male, there's the director, and a black female that's a assistant director of that party, of the Workers' Party. And what makes the distinction in what we're talking about in relationship to party formation or political formation specifically to address Black people. Why we have so much resistance to it, you know, why, you know, that came to mind as I seen this, you know, the victory, because that it is supposed to be a kind of all-inclusive kind of as all-inclusive as far as working people for that party. But Black people needs for it to speak, to have the political agenda speak to their political aspirations and needs. And so it goes to the point that you always making, the need for African party, which is one in the state of Pennsylvania, already formulated, that we need to be, you know, developing, pushing, and organizing around in our community. Because one thing I didn't see in their planks, and I'm talking about the Workers' Party, I didn't see reparations as an issue on there.
No, you're not. Richard, let me mention something in reference to what you're saying about the apprehension. You don't understand what the apprehension is.
Mm-hmm.
We've talked before, and we always see that being the things that was done to our people, Europeans are always on guard, and they're always trying to plan ahead, especially when it comes to our people. And sometimes we find ourselves playing checkers and they're playing chess. So they're thinking two or three moves ahead. Now, I'm not going to put nothing past these folks. They see what Khalid Raheem is doing in Pittsburgh. They know clearly that we had two talks here, whether 10 people attended or 100 people attended. People were clearly aware of what was trying to be done here in this city. So what do? They formulate a party, put some money behind it, and put two Black people sitting as figureheads at the top of their party. I mean, anybody with two brain cells to rub together knows that Blacks is not running that party, but they act like they're in a position of power here in the city with two Black people, a man and a woman. They know clearly that this city and other cities around this country, both small and big, is the Black community can't wait for something like this to come along. I'm talking about a Black independent representation. They see it. They see what's going on, but they're trying to cut you off at the pass. They're trying to think two or three steps ahead. Now, we're going to have another Black political forum here, a Black political symposium here on the 23rd of November, Richard, to reinstate mm-hmm. the same message that this needs to be done here in the city. Now maybe folks will understand what we were trying to say before. And not that they didn't understand before, but it's always apprehension when you're talking about doing something. And I'm talking about you as a Black man, Richard, or mm-hmm. Black woman, for example, or for that matter. Because some of our people don't really have confidence in one another. And all that comes from the way we've been taught here since we've been here, and the way we've been brainwashed against having confidence in one another and respect for one another's opinions. We just got to learn how to get that stuff out of us. It's almost like a cancer that's there in all of us. All of us suffer from it, Richard. Even I do. But if you realize that this is a problem, you can always try to, just like if somebody's an alcoholic, if they realize they got a problem with alcohol, then it's always going to be in their mind whenever somebody comes around them with a drink, wherever it's a function where it's going to be alcohol served or consumed, then it's always something comes up in their mind where it's they're strongly on guard. Well, that's the same thing about this self-hatred and lack of self-respect that we have for our people. This stuff was reared in us by these Caucasians. In everything that was taught to our people, all the systems that we've experienced. This stuff is in us. It's in us. Whether we're conscious or not, it's in us. So sometimes if you come up with a good idea, you might have 20 people, 30 people in a meeting that'll hear what you're saying, but they might not get involved. They might not join in. But sometimes, just like the brother Mark, it says circumstance is going to drive our people to make decisions that they should have made a long time ago.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, and when we look at, you know, out of this here, this particular election cycle is two other events happened that I guess two different sections of the country that relates to the need for us to be singularly focused. You know, one thing I find, and or at least I advocate, that there's a challenge that a certain group of Black people have, and as you said, it may be with all of us, that to think particular, to think, to be self-centered, maybe even selfish in our own orientation and own thinking and develop our own power center out of that, that is something wrong with that. And, you know, it does bother me when we feel that, because it makes it seem that because we think of ourselves and what is good for ourselves, there is no universal application to that. You know, I don't think any other people are placed with, just because you think of yourself, that what you're thinking of yourself denies others of the same thing. Like you want something different from them just because you want it, right? I don't know where that as you say, that fear comes from. But I see that in, was that in Kansas City? They put a referendum on the ballot to take down the, just a street sign. I mean, they went through a political process to actually, you know, instead of having to do the court or someone sue, they went through the process, the political process of putting a bill through the legislative body to put a question on the ballot of whether the sign should be taken down. And overwhelmingly, which in that Kansas City is 60% white, right? So that speaks to where is this here integrative mind, this liberal mind that whites are supposed to have, you know, but they voted overwhelmingly to take the sign down.
Well, it's, you know what, I just pulled that up. You were just talking. You mind if I read a little bit of that mm-hmm. for our listening audience?
No, go ahead.
And this was in Kansas City, right after Election Day. It says Kansas City voters approved plan to remove MLK's name from street. Voters in Kansas City on Tuesday decided overwhelmingly to remove Martin Luther King's name from one of the city's historic boulevards. The decisive vote comes less than 1 year after the city council had voted to change the street's name to honor the civil rights leader. The Associated Press reports on official results from Election Day found that the proposal to remove King's name garnered nearly 70% of the vote, compared to just more than 30% of voters wanting to keep his name on the boulevard. The proposal made its way onto the ballot after several Kansas City residents pushed to restore the original street's name, the Paseo Drive. The residents collected 2,857 signatures in April to put the measure before voters, well surpassing the 1,700 needed. The supporters of the proposal say that city council pushed for the changing of the street's name without proper procedure and ignored Paseo's historic value in the process. The supporters of renaming the street after King had accused opponents of the name change of being racist. The AP noted set up Tuesday's showdown at the polls. The 10-mile stretch of boulevard runs north to south through a largely Black neighborhood of the city. Tensions over the proposal reached a boiling point Sunday when the Save Paseo group staged a silent protest at a get out to vote rally at a black church for people wanting to keep the name. The group walked into the black church and stood alongside the two aisles. Tim Smith, who organized the protest, told the AP the protest was intended to force the black Christian leaders who had mischaracterized the group as racist to say it to our face. If tonight someone wants to characterize what we said as hostile, violent, or uncivil, it's a mischaracterization of what happened. We did what we did, and we stand by it. The Reverend Vernon Howard, president of the Kansas City chapter of the Southern Christian Leadership Conference, told the AP that the King Street is a powerful symbol for the community, particularly for black children. I think that only if you're a black child growing up in the inner cities, lacking the kind of resources, lacking the kind of images, lacking the models of mentoring, vocation, and career, can you actually understand what the name on that sign can mean to a child in this community, he said. Richard, now, let's go back and talk about a couple points in that article. Now, I don't know the racial dynamic of Kansas City. I think you just mentioned it, didn't you? I think I lost Richard's volume here. Richard?
It was 70%. When I looked it up, it was 70% white in Kansas City.
70%?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, you could see this vote came down along racial lines.
Right.
Now, the Boulevard goes through a black neighborhood north to south in the city. So you had white residents that take down a sign in your community and put up their own sign after one of your icons, and then come in your church, barge in your church, block the aisles, and tell the black leadership, let me read it again. Tim Smith, who organized the protest, told the Associated Press that the group intended to force black Christian leaders who had mischaracterized the group as racist to say it to our face. Now, you're going to come in a black place of worship, basically Bogart, Brody, or any term you want to use, Richard, and say it something to your face because they characterize, and black people ain't stupid. Believe me, we know when something is racist when we see it, smell it, taste it, or look at it. And these people gonna come into your place of worship like this? I mean, didn't our people get enough when that white boy came into the church in South Carolina, sat there for a little while like he was gonna pray, and then unloaded on some of our people down there? Don't we get enough of this? You let people come into your church, your place of worship, protesters first, they outside, and next thing you know, they inside. Richard, what the hell's, what's going on here?
It's happening, you know, when you read those things and you see these, what's going on, you know, and it may seem just a quick thing to raise because, we raise it so much, but it brings that metaphor of Cynthia McKinney, you know, talking about those who standing on the sideline, you know, because you kind of make yourself vulnerable when you're just standing around watching the actors, you know, the one who's going to whip you, the one who's over you, you know what I mean? The ones who are being, because, I mean, they came right to the minister like, you know, now you know better.
And I mean, they stepped right to his face. And listen, sure, they stepped to that minister, but they stepped to the whole church.
Right.
You let these people outside protesting in front of your church want to take down an icon that black people respect and then come in your place. That's almost like somebody coming into your house, Richard. Mm-hmm. I mean, come on here. Listen, I know the black folks, some black folks are Christians, and they want to turn the other cheek, or I don't know where to get this cheek stuff. But come on, man. This is, these people are going too far. And some of our people are letting them go too far. You ought to know what the if you use just an historic barometer of European behavior, if you give them an inch, they'll take a mile.
And they're doing it, and that's why, you know, I think it's important to read the as we move on in this climate, as they call it, in this here political. I mean, they done, you know, somewhat the economic, but the politics of identity climate that we're dealing with. Because I think it was last, wasn't Trump saying, you know, around the impeachment, and you know, and I'm bringing that up to reinforce the point that you're making. That wasn't just him, but others at the congressional level saying, you know, if you push for this impeachment, you're pushing for a civil war. These things are moving aside. It's just another indicator, or walking into a church of the as you say, the vastness, boldness, that mindset is at this moment. And it ain't just there, you know, because on the other side, up in the northwest corridor of the country, Washington State, they were dealing with Act 88, Referendum 88, was to remove going through the same. You heard in that article you read that they went through the political process.
Mm-hmm.
They used the political process
to do it,
the organizing process to put the question on the ballot.
Well, wait a minute. That's the same thing that they did here in Kansas City.
That's what I'm saying.
Oh, I thought you were talking about in Washington State. Oh, go ahead.
Right. No, yeah, they did the same thing.
Okay.
The process is to put that you have to be organized enough, go through the process to put the question on the ballot so that your people, that you organize, can vote in favor so that the politicians, the policymakers, and everybody else doesn't have to wait. They did it. All they can say is this is what the people want, right? And Washington State, with that referendum 88 dealing with the whole thing of the affirmative action, did the same thing. Now, what I find is interesting, every picture that I've seen, they had an Asian person, like they're the ones that are driving this referendum. They're organizing around this referendum to pull back affirmative action in the state.
So yeah, well, Europeans found some allies in this, and that battle for that to do what they're doing. Asians, which is really weird. Because other people has been benefiting from affirmative action since it's been on the books, including Asians. So,
and the interesting thing that for me to tie that to the Workers' Party is that it's a minority group, and to tie that to why we feel, and it's a general we and a general feel that if we are a minority. Political mindscape in the political process. Why do we feel that we have to stop, that we shouldn't create or operate out of a party platform in order to deal with the issues that we have that are directly speaking to us? Now, other black folks, as you know, my colloquial, other black folks might say, well, that's too radical. You know, they may say that. But that shouldn't stop us. When other minority groups are organizing themselves for and their best interests. So I say it because it just makes sense to me that when we talk about creating an African party, you know, say in Pennsylvania or operating out of African party, we shouldn't be remiss if on that party one of the platforms or issues is going to be reparations, right? Because no other party making the Democrat Party is not going to be pushing it.
No, and they're not putting it as one of their planks.
The Republican Party is not pushing it.
No.
And I looked at this Workers' Party. They don't have it. They have
no
LGBTQ. I ain't got nothing with them, but that's what they are supporting that, but they ain't got reparations as an issue on there. So this is something, this repair and the need for the repair is something that speaks specifically to our experience. No other race, ethnic group, social comment, you know, classifier has that experience to speak to. And the effect of having that experience now is being crystallized, the disproportional wealth. But it ain't stopping there, Elliot. It ain't stopping there.
Wow. Richard, listen, the struggle continues. What I plan to do, I'm going to reach out to some of the folks I know in the Midwest and try to get somebody from Kansas City to come on, one of the activists or something out there to come on the program to let us know. You know, that really bothers me, Richard, because a group of black folks dissatisfied with something that white folks did, whatever it is, and you decide to march into their place of worship and confront their leadership, talking about say it to my face, you wouldn't get by the door. The police would be there. I mean, where was the police when these people? Now, the black neighborhood had already labeled these people as racist. So they're outside protesting. They had the goulions, or I'll use that term, to come in a black neighborhood with a protest and then take it to another step, Richard, to invade the church and block the aisles. I'm telling you, what some of our people have allowed, you know, this is it's going too far, man. You might as well listen. That's what they did in 1870, 1880, when our people were really afraid to deal with these people. Are we afraid to confront these people now? They coming into your place of worship and demand you give them, say it to my face. I mean, that's a confrontation, Richard. That ain't nobody coming in with some type of peaceful, you know, whatever. That's a confrontation that they want. They block the aisles in the church and demand that you say it to their face. I didn't hear no police being called. I didn't see nothing on the news about police presence or whatever. I didn't see nothing. You go into a Jewish synagogue or Catholic church, any attempt to go in there without permission and talk about you want to confront the priests or the rabbi or whatever. You even attempt to do that. Number one, some of these places now, especially these Jewish places, they got somebody in there with a weapon.
What'd you say? They got something for you.
Oh, yeah. Come on here. And they're within their rights. You're coming into a place, and that's supposed to be a sacred space. In fact, if you realize it, Richard, some of these places, just say, for example, if you had a refugee or something like that, that's like it's almost like an embassy where you can't go in those places. I think they had at the Church of the Advocate, some Latin America or Mexicans or whatever was in the church. You remember? This was during the summer.
Around the sanctuary city?
Yeah. And ICE couldn't go in there because they were in the church. You remember that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So what I'm saying is, and I might be wrong, maybe some of the listening audience can clear me up. I thought the church was like off limits type of thing. You can't, you know, if somebody was in the church, they got to come out. You can't just go in there, barge in there, although they do it in black churches. I think they went in a church here in the city here a couple of years ago. A couple was getting married. And the guy had did something, had some violations or something, and they went in and arrested him. You remember that, Richard?
Yeah, I think so.
But they only do that in black places of worship. But I'm saying, I mean, you got a group that the neighborhood labeled as racist going to protest outside your church and then decide to go in. Yeah.
But this raises to this higher abstraction. And I hope the listening audience don't get lost in this, because the physical assault is, you know, right, as you say, right in your face at the local level. But there's another assault that isn't particularly physical, that is just as in our face, that can be, you know, if we're anesthetized to it, if we're you know, just like out of it and can't feel it, the children, and you had made reference to 1877. Well, is it next week? There's going to be at the highest court in the land a discussion. I mean, a frontal assault by the Justice Department and the corporations and the business community around whether black people, as I see it, as I interpret this, should still be protected class because of our particular experience coming out of the Civil War, going into Reconstruction, and having to have that Civil Rights Act of 1866 put in place.
It's interesting, Richard, that the hypocrisy of this government here and the Europeans that run it, because you're talking about the Voting Rights Act and the Civil Rights Act of 1964. Why would you even need that when you had the Civil Rights Act of 1866? It was totally disregarded then. So then they turn around and basically rewrite laws that they already had on their books that wasn't even followed. And, you know, some of our people, and I hope they, because I didn't hear it this time, this election season, but they might do it again when this guy's running in 2020, Trump. The black elected officials running around in the community talking about vote like your life depends on it. Because that Civil Rights Act of 1964, a lot of black folks might have lost their life in and around that. They didn't just lose their life for no voting, but they were fighting for rights, period. So that Civil Rights Act of 1964 don't really exist anymore, because it's been superseded by the Equality Act. I mean, it's in writing, Richard. That's right. What's been stated. That 1964 Civil Rights Act is basically superseded by the Equality Act that was passed by Congress, bipartisan support, and also the CBC, when that thing was supposed to have been sacred. I mean, you know, that's something that your ancestors died for, according to them. But they let other people that want to use black folks as a stepping stone, like a lot of people do, LGBTQXY and all these other groups, that now it's the Equality Act. Everybody's involved. When you wasn't even dealt with properly under that law in the beginning. Richard, let me play this, because you was talking about that Civil Rights Act and that thing that Byron Allen, he's the one kind of involved in this. He's the centerpiece around it. Although I know that when they're talking about this, it's not really about Byron Allen. As far as Europeans is concerned, it's more than that.
As far as we should be concerned, is more than that.
It should be, exactly. I agree totally with you. You wanted to say something while I try to find this video?
Yeah, well, you know, the thing that I'm, you know, the reason ever since I you know, heard this and the concern around this, because this notion of, and you mentioned about the, you know, it's the Civil Rights Act of 1964 being about voting. But one thing which is interesting, because in the Civil Rights Act of 1866, it really was to reinforce citizenship. And it explicitly said it wasn't to deal with political franchisement per se, but the question of whether we're citizens. So the issue of, and to try to be able to deal with the Black codes in relationship to contracting, you know, because of what was going on in creating the sharecropping system and the, what's they call it, peonage? The peonage system.
Yeah, peonage.
You know, so what is being challenged, you know, is the question. And, you know, like, which, what frightens me is that I haven't heard no discussion. We, as Black folks, in the various segment, we talk around it, you know, the quote unquote Black capitalists, the, you know, the Black separatists, the, you know, the nationalists, the cultural nationalists, the woke, the non-woke. We talk around this in the sense, do we need, because of our particular experience, to have the federal government as a supposedly shield against white populace, white low-level land owning or business owning, and white corporate, who, because of their, just the nature of this system, only seeing Black people as one, non-citizens, non-persons, in the political sense, because that's what the Civil Rights Act of 1866 was, to say, well, you know, after that you are a citizen. Now, that's after the 13th Amendment.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the 13th Amendment was supposed to say you're a citizen, right? But then once they seen the South, the states create laws to prevent Black people from exercising their economic empowerment within the areas that they live, around the land, around being able to, their own labor. They said they had to come back, and that was those, and put another safeguard in there. And that would be that Civil Rights Act of 1866, and specifically that section 1981. But all centers around question for now that I thought we should be asking, do we still need to be a protective class? Now, based off of what you said went on in Kansas City, it seemed like we still need to be a protected. I don't know if that correlates, makes, you know, that one and one makes one. But if they can just walk up, as you say, they can just stage a organized protest, walk into your house of worship, hold your members at bay, and then confront your leadership. It sounds to me that you need some protection.
Yeah, that's an understatement. In fact, in that instance, you should protect yourself. You'll be within your rights. Somebody has come into your house. Stand your ground. Where's the stand your ground law in reference to that? Somebody has come into your house, invaded your house of worship. That's your house. And want to confront you. You know, Richard, if you remember when the Farmers was on, the Black Farmers, mm-hmm. and we had several of the named plaintiffs from Pickford mm-hmm. versus Glickman, mm-hmm. and they were saying this exact same thing that Byron Allen is talking about now.
Right, exactly.
They were saying that this law contracts with the government in reference to farmers, that there was it was a violation. In fact, if you remember, Mr. Slaughter kept saying Dred Scott is still in effect. Right. You remember he kept saying that?
Yeah, yeah.
Because they was dealing directly with this Civil Rights Act of 1866. So they violated it with black farmers. And it's still, you know, some our people got to realize, see that, you know, when we talk about politics, Richard, and our people go in there so they can be career politicians, make money and all this other stuff, they've got to realize when you get in these positions, it's war. Mm. It's war on another level. But they should be going in there with war strategies and ready to fight. And I ain't talking about getting involved with no Democrat, Republican fight and all that crap. Our people, listen, this city that we live in, Richard, been controlled by Democrats for over 60 years. And gentrification is out of control. Poor schools and black neighborhoods, no jobs, no business opportunity. It ain't no Republicans here. Ain't no Republicans ran anything in this city almost 70 years.
Mm-hmm.
It's just like mm-hmm. a lot of cities around the country. So our people can't keep going for this old okie doke, good cop, bad cop bull crap that they put in front of you about some Democrat, Republican. Listen, they both are the same family.
The wolf and the fox,
the same. They're going to try to devour you. You're the sheep. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
No. Because, you know, Elliot, the thing that gets me, and I apologize, but I'm just stuck on stupid on this. Because I'm looking at those, and I always say, to be challenged, I'm a Marcus Garvey conservative. So what I'm looking at, especially when we're talking about political formation, a party, as you say, African Center Party formation. I'm just looking at those of us who recognize from that, whether that political ideology, that historical understanding, what is this system and how it is constructed and who it is constructed for. Through time, we've been clear of that. So I'm just looking at us from that vantage point and asking the question, you know, do we know? Because we're just as fragmented and, you know, it's one thing to be decentralized. It's another thing to be operating powerlessly, to be operating a ship without a rudder. And to me, you know, the political party formation at least provides the framework. Because if they push this, if you don't mind, it's like two pieces that I like to share around this here, what makes me so adamant about this protective class, as I said, that Byron Allen and the economic, because he didn't push to push for this Civil Rights Act to be used to the degree that they're trying to push it as, that you got to prove almost 100% that you're being discriminated against in relationship to race.
Well, who pushed it?
The Comcast.
Okay, go ahead.
You know, Comcast pushed it, which has a Philadelphia tie. Because mm-hmm. David Cohen is from Philly. He was who at one point was the head of the Democratic Party. David Cohen, who is the money man for all the community relation He's the community relation liaison. And when they say that, every time they say community relation, they talk about the man to try to find who to pay off, who the Negro got to pay off to keep the other Negroes quiet.
Quiet, exactly.
And the thing that makes this so insidious and the triangulation so sinister is that David Cohen used to be the board president of the University of Penn. It don't end there. That makes this thing so sinister for me is that because Donald Trump graduated from Wharton School of the University of Penn. Now, why does that fit to this now? Because Comcast is giving up 10 minutes to the DOJ, to Trump's DOJ, to argue about this Civil Rights Act of 1866 and this section 1981. So the Justice Department and the corporation are making the argument to the Supreme Court, which Trump done put, what, two people?
Mm-hmm. And you already had others on there. Go ahead. Mm-hmm.
That they should consider the strictness in relationship to and black person and now they expand it, right? Because, you know, these minority citizens. But the Civil Rights Act of 1866 was specifically for Africans, ex-slaves, enslaved persons.
Mm-hmm.
That they have to prove 100% that they're being discriminated against in relationship to contracts. Of being denied a contract. So here you got a Trump Republican conservative Trump added to Supreme Court justice position. You got the Department of Justice making an argument as a support for a corporation who is, from what I understand, gets at least 40% of his revenue from black people in cable.
Or more. It could be more than that.
So, you know, so this is the, and what is it, what does it mean to be a protected class? This is a glossary definition. A protected class, a group of people with a common characteristic who are legally protected from employment discriminations on the basis of that characteristic. Protected class are created by state. That's it. So whether, whether Byron Allen, if his loss, it isn't just him, it's all of us.
Oh, yeah.
And not just us now, it's our generations in the futures that has to deal with the repercussions of this. That's the scary part.
Let me,
because you said that they gutted the Civil Rights Act of 64. Well, that's gutting the Civil Rights Act of 1866.
Let me play this clip here, and it has Byron Allen in the beginning, and then the reporter goes and asks random people, black people that was at the CBC convention last month or in September. Let me play this clip. It's about 4 minutes dealing with what you're talking about, Richard. If I can get this queued up. Here we go.
Law simply states that we will have a pathway for fair contracting in government contracting, and commercial contracting.
It establishes in federal law for the first time this principle of equality before the law for all Americans.
Because I'm currently under this capitalist system that was built on the backs of my ancestors, I deserve to be a part of it.
Yeah. Hey, Griot fam, we're in Washington, D.C. for CBC weekend, and we're asking people about the Civil Rights Act of 1866. How many people know what it is, and do they realize just how important it is for Black America?
Do you know about the Civil Rights Act of 1866?
The act that granted the land for HBCUs to be built on, a number of them, no?
I'm trying to recall. I don't know about that one. I thought you were going to... Civil Rights Act of 1866.
Oh, man. Well, it would have been right after the Civil War, which ended in 1865, which would have added the first set of reparations for Black people, potentially.
Instead of getting what some historians believe, reciprocity, 40 acres and a mule, we got this law. We got this law, and basically it says we will have fair contracting, economic inclusion in government contracting, and in commercial contracting.
The Civil Rights Act of 1866, I know that it was championed by Lyndon Baines Johnson. the chair at that time, if I'm correct, was Adam Clayton Powell Jr., right? Yes. He was the Department of Education chair. Now, what specifically the bill talks about, 66.
I mean, if that's something that we need to get to the polls and vote about it, then we need to get that word out. I mean, businesses and opportunities that will stop us from the growth and all the progress that we've made. I mean, that's huge. That's big news.
That's awful. I mean, well, you know, I feel horrible about that. The same way I feel about the dismantling of the Civil Rights Act, the Voting Rights Act, I mean, you know, anything. There's a reason that these, like I said, the same reason why HBCUs were once brought about was because we weren't able to be educated at certain universities in this country. There's a reason why a bill that would allow us to bring businesses was was established.
That's unacceptable, and that's horrible. I wish I knew more about it, and I wish there was more that I knew that I could do now, because we need to continue to have businesses, especially Black businesses.
I will say that now, in 2019, it's very interesting to apply that piece of legislation. Super relevant, but at the same time, racism has evolved, and not only that, it's multifaceted. So you have various levels other than just complexion or skin tone or being Black where racism is an issue in this country, across the world. Like I said, this day and age, a lot of overt racism is prominent. And so sort of adding that support for people who didn't get recognized before and during the 1800s, you know, based off sexuality, based off religious views, where it was more Black and white. Now, you know, it's not Black and white whatsoever. I think it's even more emphasis and more reason to reapply that type of legislation.
I'm pretty sure that they're trying to take as many rights as we have away from us because they think that it might be too much equality now, especially since we know by 2020 or 2050, the country is going to be brown and not majority white. And so, of course, that makes people who are in charge now uncomfortable. So.
Now, Richard, you heard from that clip that the majority of the people that the sister randomly interviewed didn't know anything about. The one young man had a kind of a grasp on what it was. But listen, let me read. I'm going to read that section that you're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to read that act also for our listening audience that might not be aware. Because once the Civil War ended, and it all ties in. If you remember the listening audience when we read when the meeting was held in Galveston with some of our ancestors and representatives from Lincoln's government and asked the Black folks what did they want. You remember, Richard?
Oh, yeah.
And they said that they wanted land and they wanted to be left alone. That was the consensus opinion. I think it was 80 men that was representing at that time. This came out of a lot of those things, that act. Now, let me read this first. Civil Rights Act of 1866, enacted on April 9th, 1866, was the first United States federal law to define citizenship and affirm that all citizens were equally protected by the law. It was intended in the wake of the American Civil War to protect the civil rights of persons of African descent born or brought in to the United States. That was the Act of 1866. Now, let me read that section 1981. A federal law prohibiting discrimination on the basis of race or color and ethnicity when making and enforcing contracts. Section 1981 specifically grants all individuals within the U.S. jurisdiction the same rights and benefits enjoyed by white citizens. Regarding contractual relationships, courts have interpreted Section 1981 to apply to employment contexts, including at-will employment and independent contracting relationships. Section 1981 also prohibits retaliation. It does not prohibit discrimination on the basis of any other protected class. Section 1981 applies to all private employers, labor organizations, but does not apply to discrimination by the U.S. federal government as an employer. It does not apply to state or local government employers. Section 1981 does not require an individual to exhaust administration remedies by filing a charge before any government agency and waiting for that charge to be adjudicated or released before proceeding to court. So you can see here that that partner bill or that partner amendment with that law, Richard, was directed specifically towards our ancestors, African Americans, born or brought to the United States. And in order to enforce that law, which was under the protection of the government, they sent troops down there to make sure these laws were enforced. Now, that only lasted a couple of years because they withdrew the troops, and we know what happened afterwards. So, how are you going to, and this is just a rhetorical question, Richard, how are you going to deal with blacks being a protected class when you never followed through with your promise in the beginning? It was never followed through with. And if that's the case, then reparations and everything comes into play. Everything almost ties in with this, Richard.
And that's what makes it so interesting because, you know, those of us who are advocating in whatever mode or fashion that we're advocating for reparations, this, like you said, because the question of even if they didn't do it, if they're saying, I mean, the contradictions of you keep telling everybody that this is a country ruled by law. And what you're going to do now, we will have to prove. Well, reparations, whether you say the study, the research, you know, the consistent status of African people is saying that we still, from an economic perspective, need to be protected. And that's where the language of Byron Allen makes sense. He's saying Comcast spends $70 billion. Now, how much of that $70 billion go to black contractors? $70 billion. And here, somebody from Pennsylvania, David Cohen, how long, we've had somebody here, a brother here who was talking about how the contracts in Philadelphia, how black contractors are being, I mean, for lack of a better word, bamboozled out of not getting local contracts.
Mm-hmm.
$70 billion and no black contract. So the economic disparity, if you push this, then that means they don't have to, because you have to have the infrastructure. I mean, Byron Allen has the economic and legal infrastructure to push this case, to even ask for, at a legal, from a legal vantage point, you know, to pursue this. How many small contractors who feel that they have gotten, you know, haven't got a contract, didn't even get subcontracted? I mean, they got one guy here in the city, a union guy, ready to go, you know, up to the federal court. They get because of what? And I'm speaking of Doherty and the boys.
Yeah.
Because the union contracts that they, the contracts that they get, and at the same time, black people have been excluded from being a part of those apprentice or those high skill, high wage jobs that would not have to be worried about getting minimum, raising the minimum wage. This thing is, you know, it's you know, and as you say, and as the clips show, and we're nebulous about it.
Yeah, listen, I quote that verse in the beginning that our people are destroyed for the lack of knowledge. If we don't know these things are going on, then how are you going to fight? But the thing is, Richard, the thing is this. You got some of our people that know what's going on in reference to this. You got constitutional. In fact, wasn't Obama a constitutional attorney?
I don't know about constitutional. I know he was attorney. I don't know if he was a constitutional attorney.
Well, I think that he was. I might be wrong. Okay. But some of our listening audience is a little smarter than me. They probably know. But they know that these things. Listen, that Telecommunications Act of 1994. I see Brother Otis says yes. Yeah, he was a constitutional attorney. That Telecommunications Act of 1994 that cut the legs out of black radio and allowed these conglomerates to just buy them up, and you couldn't even be that. All of that touched on that was infringing on that law. It wasn't challenged. It wasn't challenged. Black farmers have been trying to challenge this thing in reference to their plight. And those men aren't constitutional attorneys, but they can read. And knew that their rights were being violated based on that law of 1866. In fact, I got to get them back on here because I didn't get an update from them in reference to that Stein seed. All of this stuff, all of it ties in, Richard.
All of it relates. And where I thought you were going down that line, because. And I ain't too clear on this. I just maybe just have the terminology, and it might not even. Because when Byron Allen was asking for, the Urban League and others that Reverend Sharpton, gave a support to Comcast. I may have this mixed up, but they're giving support. And those black congressional, they were asking for them to write an amicus brief in support of Allen. And they hadn't done it. So here's these names that should be informing and educating. I mean, even here, once again, even to this, to I think last week that I'm aware of, even the local congressional representative here from Pennsylvania's Philadelphia, he didn't give no, matter of fact, he should be getting a letter from one of the groups asking why or to provide support. But he hasn't, up to last week, he hadn't given no support to Allen in relationship to this. You would think they jump right on it.
Yeah, well, I don't hear anybody. You mentioned Evans, didn't you?
Yeah.
I don't hear anybody. I didn't hear anybody mentioning to him about anything in reference to this. And well, he's on a terrestrial station. In fact, he'll be on there tomorrow. Mm-hmm. And every time he comes on there, he talks so much. You know, you hate to think, you know, because some of these white politicians really think that black people are stupid, to be honest.
Mm-hmm.
The way they talk to him and talk around issues. But, you know, it's really insulting when you got some of our politicians that come on there and talk like that to their own mm-hmm. people. I mean, if you ever hear him on terrestrial radio, I don't know whether you heard him, Richard. He comes on every Saturday. And the crap he talks, I mean, and listen, even the host is smart enough not to let him take calls. He never he's on it for about 15, 20 minutes, and he never lets him take a call.
Say the host is smart.
Man, I'm telling you.
I mean, he had to be pushed. He had to be pushed to a certain degree to even sign on for the reparation bill, H.R. 40.
Wow. You know what? Let's take, well, I'll hold off a minute. I need to take a break right now. Let me grab a call and get a call involved in this. Let's go to 267.
Brother Elliot.
267. Yes, sir.
Hey, Brother Elliot. How you doing, man?
Hey, sir. How you doing?
Hey, Brother Richard. How you doing, good brother?
All right, now.
Hey, Richard, I stopped down the museum last Monday last week. I asked for you, but the sister said that, I forgot her name, nice sister. She bought four glass at the front desk. She said, she said she know you well. She spoke very highly of you, Richard. She said you had stepped out or something that she said. She's a very nice sister. She spoke very, very highly of you, Brother Richard. Just want to let you know that, all right, brother?
Yes, sir.
Ellie, before I talk about Byron Allen, you know, I was thinking about you and Richard as I was listening to y'all. You know, our people, it's any wonder why the white man don't have the respect for our people. Two things, Sherelle Parker, our esteemed councilwoman, the one that was hooked with DUI 3 years ago. As you know, Brother Elliot and Brother Richard, they say she's one of the ones, along with Helen Gilmer, some of the others, they're grooming to be possible mayoral candidates 4 years from now. Well, as you know, when Kenny won the primary back in, I think, in May, you see how she was the first one to run up there and give Kenny a hug and kiss. Well, when he won the other night on Tuesday night, she did the same thing again. I said to myself, I said, she got her head so far up Kenny's behind. It's pitiful, man. I mean, she ran over and hugged the white boy Kenny quicker than anything. She did it before the white people did. Male or female. I'm like, what is wrong with you, Sherelle? You that investment in Kenny oh, man, it's pitiful, man. And then to top it off, Brother Elliot and Brother Richard, they showed when Nancy Pelosi was here the other week at the convention center for that Democrat fundraiser or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Elliot and Richard, it was pitiful, man, to see them Negroes. I'm talking about Dwight Evans, again, the usual suspects, no surprise there. Dwight Evans, Curtis Jones, who else was there? Vincent Hughes, I think Joanne McClintock, state rep. I mean, these Negroes, Brother Ellis, no, like, don't take my word, but you get a copy of the public record. These Negroes breaking their necks to take a photo with Nancy Pelosi. Like, this white woman was God. I mean, it was pitiful, man. I mean, it was breaking it, because even the article says how they was fighting for FaceTime.
Oh, they were pushing and shoving?
Well, not so much, it could have been that, Ellie, to be honest. I wasn't there. It could have been that. But the article in the public record said it was really pushing to make sure they got a photo with Nancy Pelosi when she was there. I'm saying, well, these Negroes are pitiful, man. I mean, come on, man. Who the hell is Nancy Pelosi? I mean, she doesn't know but another Caucasian woman. You know what I mean? Who is she? You know? I mean, it's just, oh, my God. No, if there was pushing to get a photo with Minister Farrakhan or Dr. Kering or somebody like that, I would have no problem. Or somebody like Cynthia McKinney, I would have no problem with it. I would be applauding it. But for you to be breaking your neck to get a photo with this Caucasian woman, and again, I'm not hating on that. So, I mean, she's like any other white woman, good, bad, or indifferent. I mean, she is who she is. I mean, she's a Caucasian. I mean, so it's not like I'm wishing her no ill will, but I'm listening. She's a Caucasian. She's not speaking strong against white supremacy. She, like I said, she has to be pushed most of the time, like most white people do, to speak on racism, police brutality. So, I mean, my point is that why is all this here big hoopla? Like she's some kind of savior for black people. See, that's our problem. We always looking for some benevolent, like Minister Farrakhan told Tim Russert on Meet the Press several years ago. He said, Mr. Russert, we as conscious black people, we're not sitting around here waiting for some benevolent white man or white woman to save us. He said, we know that's not going to happen. He said, that was going to happen, would have happened a long time ago. So if we're going to be saved, we got to save ourselves. So, of course, Russell going to come back and say, well, Mr. Farrakhan, are you saying that y'all don't take help from white people? He said the best thing that white people can do, like he told you pretty much what Malcolm said. He said white people sincere about helping the plight of black people. He said don't try to join us. He said because you stymie our movement. He said fight against those whites that you know racist and bigoted to the core, that's holding black people back, fight against them, whether it's in your family, your job. That's the best. And I tell that to white people all the time. You really sincere about helping my people fight against them bigots that control, they have access to influence on the police departments, the banks, the banking industry, and all those things that directly affects black people. You sincere. But to sit there and tell me, oh, Brother Richard or Brother Ellen, Brother Joe, I'm not a racist. I like black people. I'm waiting, whether you do or not, what good is it? Like Donald Black, I'm not saying that it's not some white people that is sincere and really don't like, they really like black people. That's pretty much might be the truth. But what good is a white person saying they like you and everything? What good is that going to do? Even if they're sincere about it, what good are they going to do? They going up against millions of other white people. They ain't out there actually fighting against those bigots and stuff that's trying to do harm to black people. Them saying that they like you and even they did like you, what the hell is going? What good is going to do, you know? I mean, so the point is that Nancy Pelosi, she ain't out there pushing for reparations. I mean, I just lip service for it, but just actually pushing for it, you know, getting above the biggest that she in Congress and the Senate with. If she ain't out there pushing for it, what good is that? You taking a photo with her? What the hell are they going to do? You know?
Yeah. Well, you know, yeah, you're right.
I mean, so that's what I'm saying. We just love this photogenic stuff, this symbolism and stuff like that. So now Curtis Jones and I guess Sherelle and Benson Hughes and Dwight Evans, they could brag about, oh, I took a picture with Speaker of the House Nancy Pelosi. And so what? You know? I mean, it's just, oh, man. But real quick on Byron Allen so others could get on. You know, have they ruled on the case yet, Brother Allen Richard?
I think it's next week.
Yeah, the 13th.
Okay.
They go present.
Well, again, like everybody been saying, all the legal observers been saying, and you and Brother Ellick alluded to it, Brother Richard, a few minutes ago. Yeah, if this case go the way for Byron Allen, it can have positive, long effects for black people. And if it goes against, it can have negative effects and stuff. So, I mean, it's pretty much how that stands at the moment. But again, David Cohen, who y'all mentioned from Comcast in Philadelphia, who, as you know, is a former Rendell cabinet member, he's a cold-blooded bigot. Let me say this again. David Cohen, who's a local president of Comcast here in Philadelphia, is a cold-blooded bigot. And I know forget several years ago when Brother Robin was talking to Andrew Cohen outside the City Hall when Rendell was, Rendell was mayor at the time, I believe. Well, anyway, he told Andrew Cohen, Andrew, they was out there protesting the racism coming out of the Rendell administration, some other things. He talked to Andrew Cohen like he was less than a child. Because like you said, they think our people stupid, and they talk to us like we're less than him because we allow it to happen. He said, Andrew, get back in here. Get back in this place. I'm surprised that y'all here with these people. I'm ashamed of you. And Andrew called like a little house Negro. I'll be in Dave's or something like that. He said to that devil, I'd have told that devil, who the hell you think you're talking to? I mean, he said this in front of Brother Rob and everybody. Like, he talking like he was less than a Herman Bain. I mean, but see, and Richard, this is why this stuff happens, because we allow that to happen. See, only a person that got a low self-esteem will let another man talk to you like that. But this is what black people do. That's why in Harrisburg, Milton Street said years ago, before Milton lost his mind, Milton told the truth when he told Mary Mason over 25 years ago how them white bigots up there in Harrisburg, they would tell those black state reps and stuff, you niggers, you coons and stuff like that. I get tired of you going up in the niggers and stuff, and they come up here talking stuff. And if y'all don't do right, we're not going to pass this the bill to help you coons out in North Philadelphia. This is stuff they were saying to them Negroes, man. So Milton Street said, well, since they see the two, said, I got two of them play with fire. He said, Milton, so I gave them right back to him. I would tell the white boys up there, well, if you don't, you know, compromise with me on this issue, I ain't gonna pass the bill for your crackers up there and Elks County somewhere. He said, well, get right back to me. He said, once he did enough time, the white boys would start laughing and they would stop saying all that because they didn't like the fact that he was giving it right back to them. You know what I mean? But them Negroes that was all pitiful, when let the white boys just talk to me any kind of way, they got stepped on. They got stomped on and they got stepped on. And that's what a bully does until you correct the bully. You know what I'm saying, Elliot?
Yeah, well, it kind of leaked out to kind of coincide with what you're saying. It kind of leaked out for anybody that's listening that's a Pennsylvania, Philadelphia resident. It leaked out that they were doing that when they did it to Dwight Evans, who's now a congressman.
Sure.
They was calling him all kind of racial epithets, the N-word and all that other stuff.
That's right.
And
that's right.
He didn't do anything about it. He accepted it.
He called for a prayer breakfast.
Okay.
A prayer breakfast. I mean, but see, this is what these Negroes do. When these white boys call them the N-word or whatever, gorillas, whatever, the white Wilson Good did the same thing too. When that white boy from South Philly, Bob Corbett, came out there and had a thing of Wilson Good looking like a gorilla, Wilson, and calling Wilson Good every name in the book. And Wilson Good says, "Sir, we don't have to indulge and name calling. Let's have lunch and talk about it." See, when the white boys insult these Negroes, they want to have prayer, breakfast, and lunches. Ellie, if you were Richard, me went up there, or Brother Otis went up there and insulted that Negro and said something, he ready to fight us or have us arrested. But see, them white boys do it to them. They're little cowardly, self-hatred, punkified Negroes that they are. They want to have a prayer breakfast. They want to, because they scared to death of them white boys. I mean, it's no way of getting around it. They scared to death of them white boys. That's why they call for prayer breakfast. Them Negroes are disgraced in this life and they're disgraced in the next life. Like Michael said, they only get the gorilla suit on and get tough when it's their own people and stuff. Them Negroes are
despicable,
man.
Now, wait a minute, Joe. Let me say this before we move on.
Sure. Okay.
Because I don't know whether you heard it. In Kansas City, they voted to take down the sign, Martin Luther King Boulevard, that ran through the black community. I think it's 10 block stretch. I had the article in front of me. I think it was a long stretch that run north and south in the black community.
Mm-hmm.
And they voted to take the sign down and put the old sign back up there. Now, it said that the vote basically went down along racial lines.
Mm-hmm.
And the black folks were complaining that it was racist that was pushing this.
Mm-hmm.
So it said that, and this is according to a published report, AP, said that the people that were, the whites that were involved in this referendum to push to get the sign taken down, came down to protest in front of this black church. And they not only was protesting outside, they came in the church, blocked the pews, and demanded the black Christian leadership to confront them to their face. Now, where's the black clergy? And I'm talking about national black clergy.
Mm-hmm.
Where are they on this issue? I haven't heard even some of these local ministers here, because there's four black megachurches here in Philadelphia and several other ones that's bordering on being megachurches. I haven't heard anything. You got a man that's a morning host on a terrestrial station that's a minister. Have you heard him talk about this?
Nope. Well, let me say, I'm going to be facetious, Brother Elliot, because I don't want to take up too much more of your time. When them biggers came in the church, did they offer them some collard greens and chitlins or whatever?
I don't know what they offered them. But,
yeah,
listen, they confronted them in their own church and blocked pews.
Wow. finally, last point on a similar note, you see what those white diggers did down in Mississippi? They tried to, these white racist diggers was trying to deface the Emmett Till Memorial, stuff like that. I mean, so you see clearly these racist diggers are feel emboldened, and it's not going to stop until the strong, courageous, fearless black men put a stop to this fooling. Because them white boys ain't got no heart. They're a bunch of cowards. Some of them run up against strong black men. They won't be coming to no black churches or the face of no black memorials, whether it be Emmett Till or Dr. King or nothing else. Once they, as long as you got these handkerchief-head, boot-licking Negroes that's scared to deal with them, they're gonna have their way. But when they run against strong black men, they mock them, so they whip out like the cowardly punks that they are, racist cowardly punks that they are. I mean, it's that simple. It's not rocket science. It's that simple, you know what I mean? But anyway, I'm going to thank you, my brother Richard, for the time. Y'all keep the good work, man, and I'll sit back and listen to the rest of the show.
All right. Thanks for the call, brother.
You're welcome. Thanks, Richard.
I know. Richard, we'll take a brief break, and when we come back, I guess we got about 20 more minutes left in the program. If somebody want to get involved in the conversation, they can do that by dialing 215-490-9832. That's 215-490-9832. We're in Freestyle Friday mode here on Time for an Awakening. We'll be right back.
Listening to Time for an Awakening, with host Brother Elliot and Brother Richard on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
All Insurance Incorporated, an African-American owned and operated insurance agency and business for over 20 years, located at 231 Southeastern Road in Glenside, PA, with other offices in Germantown and West Philadelphia. Call now for commercial insurance quotes, homeowners insurance quotes, automobile insurance quotes, notary and tax services, representing over 15 major A-rated insurance companies, offering a discount on all notary services when you call in for a free quote. Call this number, 215-885-2444. That number is 215-885-2444. 215-885-2444. All Insurance Incorporated.
Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley. Dooley Brothers, specializing in shingle, rubber roofs, gutters, downspouts, and vinyl sidings. Call for your free estimate today. 215-224-3882. That's 215-224-3882. Dooley Brothers Roofing, the roofing experts you can trust. That number again, 215-224-3882. 215-224-3882. Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley.
I think you'll find, sir, that there will come a time when black people wake up and become intellectually independent enough to think for themselves. As other humans are intellectually independent enough to think for themselves, then the black man will think like a black man, and he will feel for other black people. And this new thinking and feeling will cause black people to stick together. And then at that point, you'll have a situation where when you attack one black man, you are attacking all black men. And this type of black thinking will cause all black people to stick together. And this type of thinking also will bring an end to the brutality inflicted upon black people by white people. And it is the only thing that will bring an end to it. No federal court, state court, or city court will bring an end to it. It's something that the black man has to bring an end to himself.
Now you preachers and leaders, you administrators, you teachers, you leaders, you are the worst. No cowardly, punctified leader will lead this new generation of young black men and women. Your day of leading them is finished. You can't feel it? When you talk to young people, you can't feel that you're missing them? Parents, you can't feel when you're talking to your children that this is a new generation and they don't want to hear your compromising talk? Did you hear them in Ferguson tell Jesse, get the hell out of here? You ain't no leader. I was hurting for my brother because Jesse worked hard for our people. But time has moved on. And what was good yesterday ain't no good at all today. So either you become a new vessel so that new wine can be poured into the old wine. Your day of leading our people is over, and it will never come back to you again.
Damn it, we're still in the land of our bondage. We're still in the land of captivity. We're still a slave to the Democratic Party, still a slave to the Republican Party. You can't even see a Freedom Party. You don't see it. You're a slave. I'm a slave. And unless we admit that we are slaves, then we can never get free. Never get free.
Put the present Democratic administration in Washington, D.C. The whites were evenly divided. It was the fact that you threw 80% of your votes behind the Democrats that put the Democrats in the White House. When you see this, you can see that the Negro vote is the key factor. And despite the fact that you are in a position to be the determining factor, what do you get out of it? The Democrats have been in Washington, D.C. only because of the Negro vote. They've been down there 4 years, and all other legislation they wanted to bring up, they brought it up and gotten it out of the way, and now they bring up you. And now they bring up you. You put them first, and they put you last, because you're a chump. A political chump.
So you could see that the government of America has been planning our demise.
any members of Congress here, any members of the civil rights movement that are here. You love this nation. You've suffered every indignity to make America better, that she might be great. And every time you forced her to make a law that was in our favor, they came right behind that law with skill and chicanery to make the law of non-effect.
When it came to treating the citizens of African descent fairly, America failed. She put them in chains. The government put them on slave quarters, put them on auction blocks, put them in cotton fields, put them in inferior schools, put them in substandard housing, put them in scientific experiments, put them in the lowest paying jobs, put them outside the equal protection of the law, kept them out of their racist bastions of higher education, and locked them into positions of hopelessness and helplessness. The government gives them the drugs, builds bigger prisons, passes a three-strike law, and then wants us to sing God Bless America? No, no, no. Not God Bless America. God damn America. That's in the Bible, for killing innocent people. God damn America for treating her citizens as less than human. God damn America, as long as she tries to act like she is God and she is supreme.
Welcome back to Time for an Awakening, and it's 9:46 here in the city of Philadelphia. We're in Freestyle Friday mode, and still got some time left if you get involved in the conversation, if you choose to, by dialing 215-490-9832. That's 215-490-9832. Brother Ridget.
Yes, sir.
You know, a couple other articles that I wanted to kind of share with the listening audience, but it's something I wanted to bring into the conversation last week when we had Jeff Menzies on, and he was talking about the African origin of and symbols of masonry, Freemasonry, and you asked him about Mariah Stewart, and he was kind of unaware of who she was. I just wanted to read some excerpts of the speech she gave at the African Lodge up there in Boston. I know you're familiar with it, Richard, because you shared it with me. But it was some things that she said in there that I think is important, even now. And it's kind of surprising that some of the things she said was going on during that period. What did you think about some of the things she was stating, Richard? I want to read it for the listening audience.
As you say, this is 1833.
Yeah.
So to looking at these free, and we're talking about Boston.
And they said it was free. They was free
black men.
Mm-hmm.
And organized free. I mean, they weren't, you know, even to participate in a lodge, you had to have a certain standing, economic standing, social standing.
Mm-hmm.
And then for her to say, to make it clear what they're supposed to be standing for. And her observation of what they're what she don't see them standing on. It's a powerful historical testament. Because as you say, it seems to be a continuity in that kind of positioning for organization at all, you know, and for a social grouping at all. You know, so when I read her and I think about that time and I think of it, I just see it's the manifestation of the challenges we have now, or why we call a complaint, why we don't see more, you know?
You know, and it's kind of, you know, her, what she did, to me that, you know, because I never buy into this narrative that he put out there about some, and the white media likes to really play that up about some problems between black men and black women.
Right.
I think that's there, especially with people that are ignorant and don't understand what's going on. But from people that always had some sensibility and some consciousness about them, it was never a problem with active black women out there, or black men either, for that matter. Mm-hmm. Their work, their mindset was always valued. You've seen it among conscious men, especially during our development here in this country. You only have problems when you got ignorant men out there and some ignorant women that want to have this junk going on between them, and especially men putting their hands on women and all that type of stuff. But I want to share, because David Walker, now Mariah Stewart had a friendship with David Walker.
Yep.
I think by the writings and all that they
here
were.
You go.
Well, I think that there was his woman. I'm
not sure. So, but yeah, they were close.
Yeah, they were close. And David Walker, because our listening audience wrote David Walker's appeal, but he died of mysterious circumstances when he went to Boston. Mm-hmm. And Mariah Stewart kind of took up the banner,
right?
As far as his work, you know, what she could do. But I want to read a couple of excerpts of what she stated when she addressed the African Lodge in Boston on February 27th, 1833. And just for our listening audience to kind of check out what she stated to, and I assume it was mostly men there. Well, that was African Lodge.
Yeah.
So it was men there. It was men. I don't know whether there were any women present. Right. She was addressing the men. But look at what she stated.
And they invited her, too.
Exactly.
They had to invite him. Mm-hmm.
February 27th, 1833, Mariah Stewart gave a speech at the African Hall in Boston. And this is what she stated. African rights and liberty is a subject that ought to fire the breast of every man of color in the United States and excite his bosom a lively, deep, decided and heartfelt interest. I am sensible that there are many highly intelligent gentlemen of color in the United States, in the force of whose arguments I should discover my inferiority. But if they are blessed with wit and talent and friends and fortune, why have they not made themselves men of eminence by striving to take all the reproach that is cast upon people of color, and in endeavoring to alleviate the woes of their brethren in bondage. Talk without effort is nothing. You are abundantly capable men of making yourselves men of distinction, and this gross neglect on your part causes my blood to boil within me.
Mm, it's a gross neglect.
Yeah. Here is the grand cause which hinders. Hold on a second. I'm sorry. Cause my blood to boil within me. Here is the grand cause which hinders the rise and progress of people of color It is their want of laudable ambition and requite courage. Africa was once the resort of sages and legislators of other nations, was esteemed the school of learning, and most illustrious men in Greece flocked thither for instruction. But it is no use for us to boast that we sprung from this learned and enlightened nation. For this day, a thick mist of moral gloom hangs over millions of our race. Our condition as a people have been low for hundreds of years, and it will continue to be so unless by the true piety and virtue we strive to regain that which we have lost. While our minds are vacant and starving for want of knowledge, theirs are filled with overflow. Most of our color have been taught to stand in fear of the white man from their earliest infancy, to work as soon as they could walk, to call master before they would even call the name of mother. Continual fear and laborious servitude have in some degree lessened in us the natural force and energy which belongeth to man, or else in defiance of opposition of men. I exclaim that for the want of knowledge, we have labored for hundreds of years to support others and been content to receive that what they chose to give us in return. White Americans gained themselves a name, like the names of other men in this earth, while in reality, we have been their principal foundation and support. We have pursued the shadow. They have obtained the substance. We have performed the labor. They have received the profits. We have planted the vines. They have eaten the fruits of them. I would implore our men, especially our rising youth, to flee from the gambling board and from the dance hall, for we are poor and we have no money to throw away. I do not consider dancing as a criminal offense in itself, but it is astonishing to me that our young men are so blind to their own interests and future welfare of their children as to spend their hard earnings for this frivolous amusement. For it has been carried on among us for such an unbecoming extent that it is becoming absolutely disgusting. But I forbear, let our money, instead of being thrown away as hitherto, be appropriated for schools and for seminaries for learning for our children and youth. The rays of light and knowledge have been hid from our view. We have been taught to consider ourselves as scarce superior to a brute creation. We have performed the most laborious part of American drudgery. Had we as people received one half of the early advantages of whites have received, I would defy the government of the United States to deprive us any longer of our rights. Richard, I'm going to stop there.
That's like a case for reparations to me.
I think that was a heavy speech that Mariah Stewart gave. A heavy speech. I would suggest that the listening audience pull that up. You can go to blackpast.com. If you Google it, you'll probably see it. The excerpt of her speech to the African Lodge. And the thing she said to our people back then, Richard, is strikingly similar to some of the things going on now.
Oh, there you go. Yes. Yes. I'm always amazing, you know, as I listen to that and, you know, I think about even, it makes me think that Garvey must have read that speech.
Why you say that?
because if you, in some of the speeches that he's done, he did, if you look at the language, it's quite similar.
Okay.
Speaking about Africa, speaking about, you know, what black men should be doing, what whites did at the feet of Africans. I mean, if you get the philosophy and opinions and you go through it, you hear what she said in 1833.
Okay.
So, wow. so it's just, you know, it's, but the, and, you know, as you read that there, I was thinking that whole dance hall, I mean, we talk about that now, it's spending your money on frivolous.
Yeah, yeah. When I read that part, I was like, I was taken back, Richard.
Mm-hmm.
When she said that they were doing that, she said, let me read that again. It says, flee from the gambling boards and the dance halls, for we are poor mm-hmm. and we don't have money to throw away. She said, I don't consider dancing as a criminal in itself, but it is astonishing to me that our young men are so blind to their own interests and future welfare of their children that they spend their hard earnings for this frivolous amusement to the point where it's becoming disgusting. Oh my goodness. Mm-hmm. Mariah was rough.
No, she's bad.
Mm.
Yeah.
And it's kind of funny, Richard, that she was saying that in a African lodge.
Mm-hmm.
Which have morphed now into a Masonic lodge. They don't use the term African lodge anymore. But, right. You know, there's a lot of partying and all going on. Listen, I don't want to cast aspersions on anybody. It might be a Mason that's listening. All I know is from what I hear. You know, what Mariah was saying, maybe a lot of that was going on then.
But as you said, the thing that struck me in this debate that we have now around the identity question. Are we African? Are we American? You know, are we, you know, Hebrew? Are we Muslim? You know, are we Aboriginals? You know, those, you know, they were constructing an identity.
Well,
tying it to a continent.
Yeah, but it didn't seem to be a problem to the men and women to have an identity then. They didn't seem to have no qualms of who they were. A lot of their social organizations had that right in front.
And I would like to be challenged on this, but I believe I'm correct. The shift in that comes out of Philadelphia. To color, you know, to appease, and she makes it clear, you know, like y'all appeasing these white folks. Basically, I don't know why, but I see it. Y'all say y'all call them master before you call your mother.
I know it, boy. She, man, I'm telling you, she laid it down, boy. Wow. Yep. Yeah, well, I recommend that the listening audience read that and share it with the young girls that's in your families so they can have something to be proud of instead of these false narrative stories like I understand it's movie shows, Harriet. You know, it's good that, you know, if somebody sees that movie, come back and look up real narrative and history of Miss Tubman and share that with your children instead of sharing a black bounty hunter chasing her all over the country and then at the end he tries to kill her but she was saved by a white slave master and all this, you know, foolish stuff that's added to these films that makes absolutely no sense, but it plays into a narrative that they want to build on.
Constructing a new identity.
Exactly, because it's not necessarily for you, Richard. You might be aware that that's totally false, dealing with Harriet Tubman. But some of these children, and they go to a movie and see that, they're not aware.
Right.
So it plays into exactly what they want to build.
And when all of us are gone, and that's the only, and they're playing that like we with TMC, that's going to be the narrative that provides the education. You find, you hear in Texas and other places how they're trying to rewrite the books, take this out, call them that, they're immigrants, this whole 1619, 2019, to construct a new narrative, not for us, but for the generations that'll come after that has no sense of history, and we have no sense of communicating a history that reinforces the struggle, the liberation movements, the maroonage that we come out of. We're all a part of this citizens body that comes in struggling, together under this hope of creating the American democracy.
Richard, we come to the end of another program, man. Always an interesting subject matter being brought up. I want to thank everybody for listening to the program this evening. Lively discussion, as always, and we'll be back on Sunday, Lord willing, to continue on this path towards an awakening. Peace.
Peace.
If you're driving through the country on a lazy afternoon, or you're watching your children playing after school, they seem to be so have to take care of. We've got to do something, yeah, to save the children. Soon it will be their turn to try and save the world. Play such a small part of the thing that they'll soon be right at the heart of. My little Tommy, he said he wants to be a farmer. Problem.
children. Soon it will be their turn to try and save the world. We've got to do something, yeah, to save the children. To save the children. To save the children.